I still see people asking me about the Jesuits and if they have any power. I already told you about the Jesuits not having any power at all. 14 years ago, around 2010, in my videos. And I'll answer that once more and once and for all in a bit more extended version and connected to their counterpart, the Protestants, and how and why the Knights Templars founded Protestantism. So here it says Ignatius de Loyola and his castle. He was of the nobility. All this is related to the French king, Philip the Fair, who is a descendant of the Ukrainian princess Anne of Kiev, also called Anna Yaroslavna, who lived from 1030 to 1075 and brought the Gospel of Reims with her from the Ukraine, on which Philip the Fair took an oath when he became the King of France. So here you can see the original picture of Anna of Kiev. And this is the original book, The Gospel of Reims in France. Yes, the French kings took their oaths on a Ukrainian book in Cyrillic writing. Pharaoh's nobility only marries Pharaoh's nobility, for which no distance is too long. Like French King Henry I, getting his wife as far away as Ukraine. And that's 1,000 years ago, in the year 1050. As if there weren't any nice French girlies around. These are pure pharaonic bloodlines that hardly accept any mixing with those European tribe girls of the white slaves. So here you can see the French fleur de lis, and it's in the same color as the seal of the Ukraine. And I hope you all see it's in fact the same symbol. You've got three parts in this one, three parts in that one. And I explained it in a previous video about Putin, I think, that the origin of this here, it's all pharaonic. Therefore, 500 years later, the guy who invented Protestantism must have been a nobleman, because his wife, Katharina von Bora, was so too, of aristocratic origins, living in a castle. And on the other side was Ignatius de Loyola, the Jesuit, also a nobleman, also living in a castle. Because religion belongs to the nobility since pharaonic times, and the priests of Amun, in order to dominate the dumb slaves with religious hocus pocus. So behind religion, it is not some invisible god in the skies, but it is Pharaoh's worldwide nobility behind religion and basically owning religion. So here it says Amenhotep, high priest of Amun. This is where it all started with. Also, in Christianity, there is the internal fight in between the vertical rule and the horizontal rule. So here you see two churches, one is the Catholic and the other is the Protestant. And the Catholic, I suppose this side is the Catholic Church, it's the vertical Christianity, versus the Protestant Church is the horizontal Christianity, which I will explain to you right now. It says Queen Cleopatra, 50 BC. And look at the fans. And look at the Pope here. And this is an original painting. The Pope Pius VIII. So it was a pious. There were 8 pious popes, maybe. And then there were 10 a bit less pious, maybe. From 1830. So they really had these fans. You know, it's the same fan here as in ancient Egypt. Yeah? So, look, the Pope is traditionally on a throne, like a king, which is the OWO, feudal vertical rule, like Pharaoh's nobility. And here you can see the same old pharaonic fans to cool down Pharaoh and the Pope, because it all comes from ancient Egypt. That's why there's this old pharaonic proverb, when the shit hits the fan. If you please permit me, an old pharaonic joke, still quite popular today in Pharaoh's present day armies, it says, when shit hits fan. So these are the fans, this is the fan, and this of course is the piece of shit, you know, that needs to be carried and he's ruling the entire world. So here it says Vicarius Christi, which means God's substitute on earth. And the Pope's title is Vicarius Christi, which means the substitute of Jesus here on earth, which is in the religious sense of things as vertical as it can get, dealing with a bloke who is God's substitute on earth, being the one right after God. Therefore, Catholicism is a vertical rule Christianity, like in Pharaoh's time with the priests of Amun. Nothing has changed, really. So here it says, priest of Amun. Here you can see the bloke. And here, Vicarius Christi. Same thing, nothing changed. The Catholic Church is a vertical rule with a Pope at its head, giving all the orders all the way down like a feudal king, and that's why Catholicism is the king's religion. And when a king orders the Pope to leave Rome, the Pope obeys. As it happened in 1309, when the French king, Philip the Fair, told the Pope to come to Avignon in France, so the king could better keep an eye on the Pope. Then the Pope stayed 67 years in France, where 7 popes succeeded to live in Avignon, France. So here it says, here, Avignon. He's going to the castle here. It was it still is there, a real castle. In 1309, he's one of those 7 popes of Avignon. And only upon return to Rome in 1376, the Pope started to reside at the Vatican, what never occurred before. So when a king orders the Pope around and to leave his house and his country, then the Pope obeys. So here it says, the Pope's palace in Avignon, France, where near almost 100 years the Pope was living here. So this is the original building, which is still there, exactly like this. So to all you who believe that the Pope rules the world, like the Pope being the Antichrist and whatnot, let me tell you that this is all religious hocus pocus by some American Protestant fanatics in an internal religious war between vertical Christianity and horizontal Christianity. It says vertical Christianity versus horizontal Christianity. And anyway, there is no Antichrist at all, as the Americans pronounce the name wrongly, The English pronounce it right, like Antichrist, but write it wrongly. So that's why I show it in French, because the French write l'Antichrist correctly with an E and not with an I. An E from the word anterior, the guy that comes before the alleged real deal. The jaywalkers call that guy the Moshiach ben Yosef. So here it says the Pope kissing the feet of worldly leaders in Sudan 2019. So he's kissing the feet of some Nubians and worldly leaders, who of course they're also of Pharaoh's nobility. And in fact, history teaches us that the Pope is way down in power compared to a medieval king, like for instance, in this case, the King of France, Philip the Fair. The Catholic Church hasn't any sorts of worldly power and never had any either. So you can imagine if this is happening today, then it also happened in the Middle Ages. So here he's kissing the feet of the Nubians. So you can imagine, you know, he was kissing the butt of every, the Pope was kissing the butt of every medieval king. And this is also a pink list killer thing in reality, you know. It's like, shall I dominate you or are you going to dominate me? I already told you about this. In Italy, even any Catholic priest allegedly obeys the will of the mafia, allegedly including the Pope himself, about which there are many rumors. Probably that's why today's Pope is trying to be friends with the pink list killers, to have at least someone standing behind him in the vicious world of Rome, where real friendships are as scarce as a divine miracle in hell. So here you can see about the rumors in the Vatican. You know, here's the real pharaonic obelisk. Here are the drugs and the money and the blood. And here you can see the Pope talking at the St. Peter Square with the pink list killer. Well, I hope the Pope is only going to kiss his feet. Right? There's also horizontal Christianity, which is the Protestant Church, who don't have a single man on top, but they have a consistory, also called the Council of Elders, where a group of persons take all the decisions, thus making Protestantism a horizontal rule church. It says the consistory Council of the Elders, horizontal Protestantism. And these are original paintings and drawings here. This is from France, of the consistory. Could this have to do with the Templars' horizontal NWO democracy of the Republic? Well, look, here's the logo of the combined Protestant churches of France, which is in fact a Knights Templar's cross, as you can see here. So here, I mean, look at the blue, which is definitely a cross of the Knights Templars. And here it says, Église Protestante Unie de France, the United Protestant Church of France. All the Protestant churches of France, they have this logo. And here you can see the logo of the Protestant Church of Belgium. It says, Église Protestante Unie, United Protestant Church of Belgium. Here's their website. It's not only one church, all the Protestant churches of Belgium, they all have this Templar's cross. And the Knights Templars, they made the horizontal rule, just as the Protestant church, they have the horizontal Christianity of the consistory. And this bird must be, of course, Horus, because it's all from Egypt. And I showed you once that the Templar's cross, it comes out of a pyramid. And here you see the logo of the Église Réformée de France, the Reformed Church of France, which is not only one church, it's the United Reformed Churches of France. And Reformed, as we know, it's another word for Protestant. Look, it's a genuine Templar's cross, even in red. It's like the blood is still dripping off, again with the bird. I mean, what bird is falling down like this, you know? That's only a falcon. That's not a pigeon or something. Wakey, wakey. Here you can see the logos of the, in the Caribbean or French territories. This one is Martinique. Templar's cross with the diving bird, which is a falcon. A pigeon doesn't do this. And here another diving bird with another Templar's cross of Guadeloupe. And these islands, they are next to the island of St. James, where Jeffrey Epstein, or Epstein as some of you prefer to call him, where he was having his island. And St. James Island of Jeffrey Epstein, or Epstein, was a Templar's island. I showed it in one of my videos. It belonged to the Hospitallers, just as this here, you know. Diving bird. Well, Jeffrey Epstein also became a diving bird, so to say. And who exactly was that French king who ordered the Pope to come and reside in Avignon, France? And why that date of 1309? What happened in that era? Well, 2 years prior to the Pope being ordered to France in 1309. In 1307, this very same French king, Philip the Fair, rounded up the Knights Templars in France on that Friday the 13th, and he roasted them in front of the Notre Dame Cathedral in Paris, 7 years later, in 1314. While the Pope was still in Avignon, France, obeying the king. So here you see the Templars being roasted. Here you see the Notre Dame Cathedral behind it, because that's where it happened. Here you see it burning, you know, 1,000 years later or something like that. The Templars were arrested on 1307, so you have to relate the years. That's very important. Then the Pope got kidnapped in 1309, 2 years later. And the Templars got roasted in 1314, 5 years after that, by the same French king, Philip the Fair. So you have to see the relation through the dates, that these are all related events. And this is why, in this case, the dates are very important. Same king, same era. Could that be the reason for the Pope to leave Rome and come to France for almost 100 years? Hell yeah, of course it is. So here you see the Templar dudes, and here it says, King Philip the Fair arrested the Knights Templars in 1307 and kidnapped the Pope only 2 years later, in 1309. Of course, these were related events, almost at the same time and by the same king. And as it was not the king attacking the Templars, but rather the Templars wanting to eliminate the King of France in order to install their new horizontal rule, they knew that the king was too strong, having his army all over the empire. So the Knights Templars started to sabotage a little bit here and gnaw off a little bit there, in order to gradually weaken the King of France. And so they decided to attack the king's Catholic religion. And when the king can just order the papacy around while moving the entire Catholic religion from A to B, this literally means that the Catholic Church belonged to the king. So it says the Pope's palace in Avignon, France. It is therefore that the king's religion has an equally vertical rule system, just as the feudal nobility of Pharaoh itself. This is the true essence of Catholicism. It says the papal hierarchy of the vertical rule Christianity of the Catholic Church. Whereas Protestantism has a Knights Templar horizontal rule by the Council of Elders in the Consistory. It says the Consistory Council of the Elders horizontal Protestantism. So the king knew through the torture of 325 Templars arrested in 1307 that the Knights Templars wanted to kidnap the Pope in Rome and bring him to Switzerland, just recently founded by the Knights Templars 16 years earlier in 1291. So here you can read Templar Safe House in Switzerland, 1291, founded. Templars arrested 16 years later in 1307 and then burned 7 years after that, 1314. The Pope kidnapped to Avignon, 1309. So in this short period, because like 20 years, that's nothing in the Middle Ages. It's like half an hour, like today. So this is all related. So the founding of Switzerland is related to the kidnapping by the French king of the Pope to Avignon and the arrest of the Knights Templars 16 years after Switzerland was founded. So they were all sitting comfortably in Switzerland. Nothing could happen to them anymore. The French king, therefore, brought the Pope to France to keep an eye on him. Whereas today, the Templars' Swiss Guard are there to keep an eye on the Pope and not to protect him, but to survey him. Because, in fact, the Vatican, since 1506, belongs to the ones who invented Protestantism, which got invented only 11 years later, in 1517, when Martin Luther declared his 95 Theses on the Church of Wittenberg in Germany. So, it says the Swiss Guard, they were founded in 1506. Only 11 years later, Protestantism was invented in 1517. So here you see the grim Swiss Guard. And this guy is obviously, he's a prisoner of these ones here. So it needed to control the Vatican in order to launch and to start Protestantism in 1517. So only 11 years later, they had it all ready. You know, the Knights Templars with their Swiss Guard, they got control over the Vatican and the Pope, and then they could start Protestantism. It's not a coincidence that these dates, because it's only 11 years, which is absolutely nothing in the Middle Ages, you know, that these dates so closely near to each other, that all these historical dates, you know, it's all related. The things happening, it's all related. Protestantism is related with the Swiss Guard taking control of the Pope and the Vatican. As the Templars didn't immediately succeed in kidnapping the Pope, they decided to just simply create a new Christianity in order to weaken the King of France and gradually nor at the king's pillars of power, which in fact it did immensely. So here it says, 1517, Protestantism was invented, the horizontal rule Christianity. Here you can see Martin Luther at the Church of Wittenberg in Saxony, Germany. So the next king of France, Francis I, only 23 years after the birth of Protestantism, founded in Paris the Jesuits in 1540 at the French Sorbonne University by the Frenchman Pierre Favre as a countermeasure against Protestantism. Eventually, the Spanish Basque nobleman of Ignatius de Loyola took all the glory of being the founder of the Jesuits and making it look like a Spanish organization, where in fact they were originally French. But well, those Jesuits had no chance at all against those powerful Templars. Moreover, as the Jesuits never have been an army, but rather just a theological group inside the King's Catholic Church. So it says, Ignatius de Loyola, so that means he's an aristocrat of the nobility, de Loyola. Loyola is the place where his castle was. And so it says Ignatius from Loyola. Here he is. And this is what his castle looked like. So it says Jesuits, they were founded 1540 by Pierre Favre at the Sorbonne University of Paris, which I think is the oldest university in the world, or at least one of the oldest. And if you look at the name, Sor, that is Sar, that means the king, pharaoh, like the king of France. And Bonne, it's actually feminine, maybe because the word l'université in French, it's feminine probably. And so it means the good king, Sorbonne. And that was 23 years after Protestantism was founded in 1517. So usually the dates, you know, it's boring, they don't have much significance. But in order to understand things, which they never teach you in school, of course, it's just boring dates, you know, and boring numbers. It's, you know, it's important to relate the events, that there is a connection. So this is definitely the connection, you know, 1517, Protestantism. And 23 years later, all of a sudden, Jesuits, you know. So it's all connected, you know, and 23 years, you know, in the Middle Ages, that's practically nothing. So this is definitely a countermeasure, which is a known fact, actually. It's an historical fact anyway, that, you know, the Jesuits were founded as a countermeasure against the Protestants. By the king, of course, and that's why it was founded in Paris, in France. It has nothing to do with the Spaniards. Nothing to do, you know. They're just hiding things, you know, so, you know, just shove it on the Spanish, you know, so they did it or something. It was about the French king, you know. I mean, this must be clear by now. If you want to understand history and politics, you must leave religion out of the equation, because religion is just a distraction. And religion is owned by our pharaonic masters anyway. I recently explained to you in this video here on my other channel, Homeland Security, that if you want to understand the Middle East crisis, then forget about religion and concentrate on the local nobility. And this is the same with Jesuits versus Protestants, where you'd better concentrate on the nobility around and the nobility behind and the nobility within. Like Donald Trump being of royal nobility, just like Ignatius de Loyola of the Jesuits. And Trump going to the Jesuit Fordham University, which doesn't mean that Trump is a Jesuit, but it rather means that Trump is of royal descent, which of course he is. And what I've shown you in this video 5 years ago. So here's on my other channel, Homeland Security, here's the title: Pharaoh, Trump, genealogy, blood ties to Hillary, global king, aristocracy, master over US slaves. And here you can see him doing the same Freemason thing here, just like Adolf Hitler. Actually, it was me like 13 years ago that found Hitler doing this. And now I can find it back maybe on my channel that was taken off. And so in this video, you'll find the genealogy, the royal genealogy of Donald Trump from his mother, his Scottish mother's side, how he's related with the Queen of Denmark and the King of Norway. And this is why he was in a Jesuit university, because the Jesuits were founded in the Royal Sorbonne University of Paris, France, you know, by the French king. And this is what it was all about. Well, here it is. I'm awfully glad it's back again. You know, I made this, I found this 12 years ago. So look it up, go look it up yourselves, you know. Because now we see all these politicians doing it, you know, like Trump and Erdogan and Merkel from Germany, all of them. And he already was doing it, you know. So this is very important. And look, he's putting his hand away, you know, like a Freemason, like Hermann Göring. So the video is here on my channel that was taken off and miraculously just back after 7 years. So you see, I made this video in 2012. And it is 23 minutes, so go and watch it, because there's some more interesting things in it. Yeah. So, you just saw him doing the same hand as Mr. Trump, you know. It's all the same bunch, putting us in world wars, you know. So here it says about the Jesuits, and I just scroll down a little bit. You can find the rest yourself. And here it says, on August 15th, 1534, Ignatius of Loyola, a Spaniard from the Basque city of Loyola, and six others, mostly of Castilian origin, all students at the University of Paris, met in Montmartre outside Paris in a crypt beneath the church of Saint-Denis, now Saint-Pierre de Montmartre, to pronounce promises of poverty, chastity, and obedience. Ignatius' six companions were Francisco Javier from Navarre, and here it says Peter Fabre, you know, also called Pierre Fabre, a French guy. And he was the guy who actually, you know, founded the Jesuits. There we go. says Pierre Favre, a Jesuit priest. And Favre, he was born in 1506. I think that was the date the Swiss God was founded, to a peasant family in the village of Villaret in the Duchy of Savoy, now Saint-Jean-de-Sixt in the French department of Haute-Savoie. He was French. Of course, it was a French organization. It was in the French University of La Sorbonne in Paris, and it was the French king, you know, having a problem with the Templars and the Protestants and etc. So the whole organization was French. In 1819, this fantastic castle of Javier was given to the Jesuit order by the Duke of Villahermosa, because the Jesuit order consists of the OWO vertical rule of Pharaoh's feudal nobility. I mean, why would a Spanish duke just give away his castle to a religious order? You know, why would he do this? Look, it's a magnificent castle, especially in those days. You know, well, because the Jesuits, it is aristocratic. It's a noble organization against the Knights Templars. It's an organization by the feudal nobility. And here you can read it. It says here, the castle of Javier. And in the 1890s, the castle was donated by its owner, Duquesa de Villahermosa, to the Jesuit order, which intended to turn it into a missionary center. You know, it's so obvious, you know. Would the nobility give you a castle just like that? You know, they only marry with each other. They only give things to each other. And this is another example of it. So please, just leave religion out of the whole equation. Both Catholic, both Islam, both Protestantism, all of it. Just leave it out of the equation, because you're not going to understand anything. It's just a distraction. So here it says IHS of the Jesuits, and which apparently stands for Iesus Hominum Salvator. And here it says Isis Horus Set, also IHS. So I'll let you think for yourselves what you want to think. So the IHS of the Jesuits stands for Iesus Hominum Salvator, meaning Jesus, Savior of Man. But you might also read Isis, Horus, and Seth, which is probably practically the same. As Jesus is traditionally being depicted with the sun behind his head, just as the winged sun disk of Horus. So here you see the Egyptian stuff, the falcon god with the sun. Here as well, one more time. And this is Jesus, also with the sun. They're both the son of God, as they say. And here's the Swissy, protecting it all. The Jesuits call themselves soldiers of Christ, which is just a comparison and shouldn't be taken literally, as there never ever existed any Jesuit armies. So here you see Isis with her son Horus. This is Maria with her son Jesus. And here you see the Jesuit Pope. And this here, it looks like, you know, where you can lit a candle here, you know, for the eternal light maybe or something. As a nobleman, Ignatius de Loyola, of course, didn't even believe in God or Christ. But as a nobleman, he just didn't want to lose the nobility's vertical rule religion as a tool to manipulate the dumb commoners, or to mobilize the dumb European slaves to go into battle to defend Christianity and die for Christ or Horus, where in reality they were dying for some aristocratic warlord against another aristocratic warlord. So here it says, all wars are by and for Pharaoh's nobility and have nothing to do with God, Jesus, Allah, and the rest of Pharaoh's religious hocus pocus. This is why the nobility couldn't lose their Catholic religion to that Protestant Templar religion, because then the commoners would fight for another warlord and die for another Christ. Therefore, the nobility mobilized the already existing French Jesuits by Pierre Favre to use them as a religious tool for the Counter-Reformation. Here you see Ignatius de Loyola, the Jesuit. And here it says, Jesuit nobleman Ignatius de Loyola presenting himself as Jesus with Horus Sundisk. Here, this is the Horus Sundisk. You still don't believe that we're being ruled by a bunch of pharaohs? Martin Luther, the founder of Protestantism, was married to Katharina von Bora, of the German nobility. And from her mother's side, from the powerful Duchy of Sagan, with a Templar's cross in their coat of arms, and also the crescent moon of Islam, which you can see in the Wikipedia's German version only. So here you can see her husband, you know, hammering the thesis on the Church of Wittenberg. And here it says, the Duchy of Sagan. And you look at the clause, there are eight red clauses, so eight for octagon. It's full of Templars things here. And then here, the Templar's cross and the crescent moon of Islam. Now, do you remember what I filmed last year in that Alsatian town with exactly the same thing, only the crescent moon bending down? But that's the same thing. You remember? Shall I show you? Now, here you can see it. This is the same symbol, the same coat of arms as you just saw in the coat of arms of the Duchy of Sagan, of the wife of the founder of Protestantism. Only the crescent moon was up, but that's exactly the same thing. You know, so, and I explained here in this video, which you should see again, or if you haven't seen it before, you know, what I'm, well, just watch the whole video. It's only 40 minutes. And, you know, the Knights Templars, they had an alliance with the leaders of the nobility of Islam. And this is also one of the reasons that they're all here. You know, so here's the title. It's in the same channel. And I made this last year. In June, no, 2 years ago. So open up your eyes, you know, because they use the same symbols and the same coat of arms, and it all has a meaning. And if you can connect it, you can understand what's going on. So right after, I show you one more time the coat of arms of the Duchy of Sagan. So this actually means not only the Templars. Protestantism is not only connected to the Knights Templars, but also to Islam, which I already explained to you, because the nobility in the Orient, some of them, they want the horizontal rule. And that's why they had like Saladin, you know, the Sultan of Egypt. And he was, in fact, part of the Knights Templars. He was part of an order. I already made a film about this on my channel, Homeland Security. So, and another part, they wanted the vertical rule. So there's definitely a connection between Islam, the Knights Templars, and Protestantism, which I have already explained in my former videos why and how. So here's Katharina von Bora. This is in English. You have to go to the German one here, Deutsch. And then scroll down here. And here it is, Fürstentum. Fürstentum Sagan. So, her, from her mother's side. Just, there it is. So, here it said, just before. Fürstentum Sagan. And danach war Katharina wohl die Tochter. Katharina was the daughter of Johann von Bora, that was her father, auf Lippendorf, and his wife Margarete, who came from a lower Schlesian family, the duchy of Sagan. So there you go. Katharina von Bora was a Cistercian nun. And the Cistercians are the predecessors of the Knights Templars. And the Knights Templars were founded not in Jerusalem, 1118, but 3 years before, in 1115, at the Cistercian Clairvaux Abbey by Bernard de Clairvaux, a Cistercian monk and son of a Burgundy duke. So here you see the Cistercians in their white robes. Here it says Cistercians founded 1098 by Bernard de Clairvaux, only 3 years after the start of the Crusades in 1095. So the Crusades started 1095. 3 years later, they founded this lot here. So you can understand it had to do with the Crusades. So a so-called peaceful monk order, you know, they were founded 3 years after the beginning of the Crusades. Well, you must understand they were founded with a reason. And the reason is connected to the Crusades, about which I will tell you more in a minute. So here it says, Katharina von Bora, there she is again, nobility. And here, at the age of 9, she was moved to Nimshan Abbey, Cistercian community, and named Marienthron, Mary's Throne, near Grimma, where her maternal aunt was a nun. Von Bora's presence is in the financial accounts of 1509. After years of being a nun, von Bora became interested in the growing reform movement and grew dissatisfied with cloistered life. Conspiring with several other sisters, she contacted Luther and begged for his assistance. So apparently she got influenced at the Cistercian monastery, the Nimshan Abbey. So, and this is quite logical because it has all to do with the Knights Templars, because the Cistercians are the predecessors of the Knights Templars, and they wanted a horizontal Christianity. So here we can read about the Cistercians, the Cistercian order. Here is their logo. You'll see a lot of fleur de lis, that means the French nobility. And of course, you know, was all religion is by the nobility. Bernard de Clairvaux. He was of the nobility. I'll show you that. Yeah. So they were founded in 1098, only 3 years after the beginning of the Crusade. So that was not a peaceful monk's order, you know. It was meant for war, you know, Crusades. And here is the founder, Bernard de Clairvaux. De in French, it's of. So let's have a look here. And actually, Bernard de Clairvaux, he was really the biggest hero for Martin Luther. You know, he read all his books. And so it's quite clear where he got his ideas from. You know, Martin Luther, he got his ideas from Bernard de Clairvaux. And this is the guy who founded the Knights Templars. You know? It's all related from all sides, from his wife's sides, from everywhere. And it's all nobility. This guy is nobility. Yeah, it's not in the English. You know, Bernard's parents were Tesselin de Fontaine. You know, high nobility. And Lord of Fontaine-le-Dijon. And Adelaide de Montbard, you know, his mother. Both members of the highest nobility of Burgundy. You know, it's all nobility. I show you the castle where he was brought up in, you know. So here, the language, it's not in the English side, so I have to go to the French one. There we go. Look, there it is. That's the castle where the founder of the Cistercians and the Knights Templars, you know, where he was brought up. This is where he was brought up, you know, in a real castle. Just like the wife of Martin Luther and Martin Luther himself. I'll show you that. It's all nobility. Religion is a tool by the nobility. So here it says Maison Natale de Saint Bernard. So it's the it's where he was born and raised. So here you can see the castle where Bernard de Clairvaux was born. I told you so, that religion belongs to the nobility, and this is the high nobility of Burgundy. So here is the family name of the mother of Bernard de Clairvaux, so de Montbard, nobility, André de Montbard, and that was his uncle. Here it says, André de Montbard was the fifth Grand Master of the Knights Templar and also one of the founders of the order. The Montbard family came from the high nobility in Burgundy, and André was an uncle of Saint Bernard de Clairvaux, being a half-brother of Bernard's mother, Alette de Montbard. You know, so if I look here in French, there's a little bit more. Like here are the other members who founded the Knights Templars here, Hugues de Pin and Godefroy de Saint-Omer. Remember where the word Omerta is coming from, because the mafia is all by the Knights Templars. I made that video about it. So this is actually, I'm talking here about the base of the Reformation, about Protestantism. This is where Protestantism got born. And if you don't understand history and the dates, you know, you will never understand what Protestantism is. You know, and it's all by the nobility, just as Catholicism. It's just the internal war between the reds and the whites, you know. So here's the castle of André de Montbard. And this is where the mother of Bernard de Clairvaux, where she was brought up, you know. And it's all related to Protestantism. This here, another castle, related to Protestantism. You know, it's nothing by the people. It's nothing. There's nothing to do with God, Jesus, or Allah, or whatnot. You know, It's all religious hocus pocus. It's all about Pharaoh's nobility and using it as a tool to manipulate us and to wage war amongst the peoples. So here the site about the Knights Templar, and I just want to show you about André de Montbard. Yeah, I'll read it for you. The impoverished status of the Templars didn't last long. No, it didn't. They had a powerful advocate in Saint-Bernard de Clairvaux, a leading church figure, the French abbot primarily responsible for the founding of the Cistercian Order of Monks, and a nephew of André de Montbard, one of the founding knights. Bernard put his weight behind them and wrote persuasively on their behalf in the letter in praise of the new knighthood. That's what Bernard de Clairvaux wrote, eh? So he's about a knighthood, you know, and he's presenting himself as a monk. I mean, what's this? And in 1129, at the Council of Troyes, he led a group of leading churchmen to officially approve and endorse the order on behalf of the church. With his formal blessing, the Templars became a favored charity throughout Christendom, receiving money, land, business, and noble-born sons from families who were eager to help with the fight in the Holy Land. Well, it was not about fighting in the Holy Land. It was getting the pharaonic treasures and get them into Switzerland, which was the Templars' treasure. So I tell you once more, because this is very important, that it's the Reformation, Protestantism, Knights Templars, religion. It's all about castles, pharaohs, nobility, you know, whatnot. So André de Montbard, son of a count and born in this castle here of Montbard, was one of the original founders of the Knights Templars, together with Hugues de Pin and Godefroy de Saint-Omer. And this was the uncle of Bernard de Clairvaux. And also the mother of Bernard de Clairvaux, she lived in this castle and was probably born there as well. And this all leads a bit further in history. It all leads to Martin Luther, the Reformation and Protestantism. So this is Protestantism. It's castles and lords and pharaohs. That's what it is. It's just as Catholicism. And here, Bernard de Clairvaux. And apparently Martin Luther, he read all the works of Bernard de Clairvaux. And here it says, Martin Luther quoted Bernard de Clairvaux several times in support of the doctrine of sola fide. So here on Martin Luther, I'll show you that he was basically living in castles, just as his wife and just as his big hero, Bernard de Clairvaux, here, the Wartburg Castle. Luther's disappearance during his return to Wittenberg was planned. Frederick III had him intercepted on his way home in the forest near Wittenberg by masked horsemen impersonating highway robbers. They escorted Luther to the security of the Wartburg Castle of Eisenach during his stay at Wartburg, which he referred as my Patmos. That's a monastery in Greece, you know, high up monastery, just as this one here. So all these guys basically living in castles, it's all nobility. Martin Luther living here, his wife in a castle, and Frederick III. Well, and here further down, I'll do it a bit quickly because otherwise this takes too long. Here he's an anti-jaywalker. He's really a lot. And this, later on, you know, in the Nazi period, Luther had a big influence on the Nazis concerning the Jaywalkers. And if you see the relation to Bernard de Clairvaux, you know, founding the Knights Templars and all that, you really see the connection here to the word the Nazi Templars, also in relation to Martin Luther. They were and they still are the Nazi Templars. As only the firstborn son could get the castle and become the lord, the rest went into the monasteries and founded the Republican horizontal rule inside of the Cistercian order. The Cistercians were the only monastic order that could carry a sword legally by a papal decree. So it just needed to paint or sew a red cross on the Cistercian white cloak, and voila, the rapid transformation from innocent monk to brutal Templar was done. And they are the ones who founded Protestantism. So here the Cistercians, they just needed to paint a red cross on their cloak, and they're already carrying a sword underneath the cloak, and voila, they were the Knights Templars. In medieval times, people didn't have any surnames, and only the nobility had long surnames, mostly related to the land and area they owned and ruled over. This means that Martin Luther was of the nobility, just as his wife Katharina von Bora was. So it says Katharina von Bora, nobility, they had surnames, and Martin Luther, it means he was of the nobility, and his surname is originally of the nobility, which I'm going to show to you right now. It was more or less Napoleon who made family names compulsory in Europe. So here you see him hiding his right hand everywhere. Napoleon, and here it says Napoleon's hidden Freemason hand. Martin Luther's father's family name was Luda, which you can see here, where his name originates from Ritter Wiegand von Luda, meaning the Knight Wiegand von Luda, nobility. So here it says, I can only find this in German, it says here, the father of Martin Luther. There you go. And he came from the, his ancestor is Ritter Wiegand von Luther, from the nobility dynasty von Luda, aus from Großen Luda. This is a place in Germany. So this is the father. Well, he's got the same like nose as Martin Luther. And this is the that Großen Luda. So it's like here in the middle of Germany. And so here, yeah, so I'll go back to this one here. And here, this is interesting. I'm going to talk more about it, that they moved to Eisleben. This is where Martin Luther was born. So I'm going to talk about this a little bit more. So here once more, the dynasty of Martin Luther, called Großen Luda, with this coat of arms here. And here it says, I say it in German, der Ritter Wigand von Lüder wird als Vorfahr des Reformators Martin Luther angesehen. So the knight Wigand von Lüder is an ancestor of Martin Luther. Well, how could it be otherwise, you know? So here it says some more in English that Martin Luther, his father, his name was Luder or Ludher, and that his ancestry was the knight Wigand von Lüder from the nobility, as they all are, you know. It's all nobility. Anyway, the nobility only marries nobility. And Martin Luther was practically living in his friend's castles, like here, the Wartburg castles. Here it talks about Luther, the Wartburg castle. So here you can see that he was practically living in castles, just as his wife. This is about the castle here. Yeah, the place where Martin Luther translated the New Testament of the Bible into German. Well, what do you know, eh? It's all nobility. It is not about religion. You know, forget about religion. It has nothing to do with history, with the real history of things. So, there's the castle again. And in German, if you would say someone is from the nobility's house of von Bora, as Martin Luther's wife, Katharina von Bora, you might say that the person is a Bormann, especially in the Middle Ages. They would just say that the European slaves, they would just say, you know, this is a Bormann. Which immediately made me think of the mysterious Nazi Martin Bormann, who was born in Wegenleben, Saxony, which is only 15 kilometers away from where Martin Luther was born in Eisleben. Here's a comparison between Martin Luther and Martin Bormann, who, except for the tip of the nose, maybe, have no similarities. But there's something in the eyes, in the overall intensity, in the expression, that might give a feeling of familiarity or bloodline. Because all these powerful peoples, it's all about bloodlines and dynasties, you know. So here it says, the two Martins, their names are both Martin, Martin Luther and Martin Bormann. And this guy, he just disappeared. Nobody ever heard anything of him again. And he was the finance minister. So, you know, where the money is, that's what the nobility does. And the Knights Templars, of course. And this guy here, he's related to the Knights Templars through Bernard de Clairvaux and the Cistercians and his wife. And this Nazi is also connected to the Templars through the Nazi Templars. And the Nazis did the very same thing, you know, just killing, murdering, raping, and accumulating a lot of wealth. So this is all in Saxony, and here on the left side you see Martin Luther von Bora, and on the right hand side the Nazi Martin Bormann. And Martin Bormann, he was born in Wegeleben, what you can see here, you know, it's encircled like and with a little bit of red. Here's the Halberstadt, here's the Leipzig, and Martin Luther, the other Martin, was born in Eisleben, where he died as well. Here's the Halberstadt, here Leipzig. And from Eisleben to Wegenleben, that's only 15 kilometers. You know, that's nothing. I mean, Germany is a big country, eh? And south of Leipzig, here, Lippendorf, that's where Katharina von Bora, where she came from, in her castle. And about a little bit north of here, almost between Magdeburg and Leipzig, a little bit to the right, there is Wittenberg, the church where he put the 95 theses, you know. So it's all in the same area. And I mean, from Bormann to von Bora, I mean, the ancestors, the descendants of Martin Luther, they were also von Bora from his wife's side. You know, so von Bora to Bormann, it was only 15 kilometers. So, of course, there's a connection, you know. It's still the same bloodlines, it's still the same dynasties, you know. The last thing I did in the army, actually, another army, it was not, well, I can't tell you. I was doing this, you know, looking into the intel, you know, going, looking for tangos and see where they came from, the ancestors and the where they were born, the friends and the relatives and people they might have known, places they might have gone to, you know, to track them, you know. So I'm using my my knowledge here, what I learned, like a little bit, like tracking these guys in history, you know. So here you can see there is the aristocracy of called Bormann, like Martin Bormann, the Nazi. So it's called die Herren, you know, the Herrenrasse, you know, the superior race, the master race, die Herren von Kessel, genannt Bormann. And this, the G-E-N, it means genannt Name. Vulgoname. It's the name like the people gave to these persons. Like von Bora, they call them Bormann, you know. It's exactly what it explains here. I can show it a bit more. Yeah, well, you can look it up yourself. And this is interesting. They have... here's their coat of arms, you know, with these arrows here. It's like the whites against the reds, you know. The horizontal rule against the vertical rule. I mean, it's already in their coat of arms, and this is what it was all about. And, of course, a lion. So, Bormann, Martin Bormann, you know, the Nazi who disappeared. Well, he is of the nobility. They all were. They all are. You know, Luther has this pharaonic Y forehead, which Bormann doesn't. You see, I call it a Y forehead because, like the nose, it's real broad here, you know. And it's not really the forehead is different if you compare to, this is more European, actually. But okay, after so many generations, you know, you don't know anymore. And this is like a Y, you know, like it's going apart, so I call it a Y forehead. Also, his wife, Katharina von Bora, has a Y forehead and this very long aristocratic nose. You know, she also has like a Y, you know, it's really like going apart and very long nose, like Putin, he has that as well. And this is something many of these pharaohs have. Just look at it. They got a Y forehead, you know. It's like the forehead it's going over into the nose, like. I don't know what it is, you know, but it many of these pharaohs have this. But, well, the 400 years difference between Luther and Bormann are about 20 generations, which is a lot of mixing. So, with all this, it is very clear that the nobility rules over both Catholicism and Protestantism, which is just part of that difference in between the vertical rule and the new horizontal rule. And there's not only the vertical church of the vertical Christianity and the horizontal church of the horizontal Christianity, but there's also the vertical Jesus and the horizontal Jesus. So here it says the vertical Jesus, you can see he's like hanged up vertically, and here he's lying down. It says here the horizontal Jesus. Mostly we see the vertical Jesus vertically on the cross, but there's also the horizontal Jesus. Anyway, the cross itself has a vertical pole and a horizontal bar, because Rome was a republic, thus horizontal rule for the bar. And Mr. Inri here was Jesus of Nazareth Rex Judea, the king of the jaywalkers, which is a vertical rule. And there are three crosses for the Freemason concept of three, and the cross itself has a 90 degree angle for the Freemason concept of four. So for all our initiated Pharaonic masters, this image here reads square and compass. So you see there are three crosses here, and this here is 90 degrees, which is a square. So the square is here, yeah? And I explained to you in my videos that the concept of three, here it says concept of three and four, it represents the compass. I'll explain it one more time, because the compass in the logo square and compass of the Freemasons, it's about 60 degrees. And with 60 degrees, you can make a unilateral triangle with three corners of 60 degrees or three sides, which is the concept of three. It's also a side of a pyramid, whereas the square, with a square you can make a square with four corners or four sides, which is also the base of a pyramid, where the slaves are. Whereas the concept of three, the side of a pyramid, it's the hierarchy, of our masters, and that's them. So the concept of three is the compass, and this is a square. So it says square and compass for our initiated masters. And here it says, Jesus, king of the jaywalkers. I cannot pronounce their name because of the censorship. And Inri, it means Jesus Nazareth Rex Judea. It's Jesus, in Latin, they wrote an I for a J. I should have written another I here, but never mind. And Rex, it means king. So it says Jesus of Nazareth, the king of the Judea. And this is the vertical versus the horizontal rule. So this is the vertical rule here. And this here is the horizontal rule. It was therefore the Romans crucified the wannabe king of the jaywalkers, especially using a horizontal and a vertical component to nail the wannabe king. So here you see the Roman, here you see Mr. Inri. And here it says, the horizontal rule, Roman Republic, here the Roman, crucified their vertical rule adversary, the wannabe king of Judea. It's all about the internal war within Pharaoh's worldwide nobility in between the horizontal rule and the old vertical rule and the new horizontal rule. It's the war between the reds and the whites. That's why the Pope is doing the sign of the cross. First, you do the vertical, then the horizontal, with your two fingers You do the vertical from up to downwards, just as the vertical rule goes from the pharaonic ruler down to his subjects, and then the horizontal from left to right, as every horizontal republic has a left wing and a right wing. And it even says so in the Bible that Mr. Inri was out of the house of King David, thus officially entitled to be the genuine king of the Jaywalkers. And the whole thing is like Game of Thrones. Here it says Game of Thrones, and it's all about kings and pharaohs, you know. Here's the genealogy of Mr. Jesus at the end, and it starts with Adam. And then you've got Abraham here, and here's David, which is King David. It's a king. And one of his sons is Solomon. And from the other side, you know, you got at the end, you got Mary, the mother of Jesus, and then him here. So he goes, it's the same lineage of these kings, David and all of this, you know. So it is Game of Thrones, really. And it's all about the, you know, I told you so, that all religion is about internal power games within Pharaoh's nobility, between the traditional vertical rule and the new revolutionary Republican horizontal rule. It is Game of Thrones.